It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 44th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I've got a great interview this time with Ivan Brandon, comics creator and comics philosopher to some degree. We talk about a lot of things, including his past comics, what he has in mind for the future in general terms, and some of the topics that are interesting to comics readers and people in the industry today. I think you'll enjoy what he has to say. Then I review this week's comics. Pete Casazza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland stops by to talk about how things went in January in his store and takes a look ahead as well. And we wrap things up with Ian Cullen talking with me about news and previews. Since we have a lot happening this time, let's get to it. Okay, I'm talking today with Ivan Brandon, comics creator and maker of good books, including Cross Bronx, Viking, and most recently, Men of War from DC's New 52. How are you doing today, Ivan?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Why don't we start off with finding out how you got into reading comics? I usually like to ask people that. Do you remember how you got started reading comics when you were a kid? I know that you did read them when you were a kid.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I read for a while, but the very first thing that I remember reading was my grandmother's in Miami, but my family's Cuban, and so my immediate nuclear family are the only branch that left Miami and then moved to New York. Anyhow, we were visiting, and my grandmother just basically bought me a Weird Hulk comic as a stocking stuffer. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, I've looked it up and I found it, but I don't have it, I don't know, a lot of people have like the whole thing memorized. I don't remember exactly the number, but I remember it was the Hulk versus some weird energy creature, but the Hulk was like wearing a suit. It was some era of the Hulk where Bruce Banner was in charge. His brain was working as Bruce Banner's brain, and so it was just this funny weird thing of like the Hulk on a construction site wearing a suit, this super genius version of the Hulk. It wasn't an issue one by any stretch of the imagination. It was a random thing about these characters I'd never heard of. I found it intriguing. I found the storytelling intriguing at that point. From that point on, it was weird. I actually had a really weird nerdy mom, and at some point in the 80s, my mother decided she was into comics and started subscribing to Marvel Comics. It's a really strange, my mother, you know, it was an immigrant single mom who randomly decided that she was, you know, going to start reading the X-Men. And so my older brother and I would just, at that point, the Marvel Comics came in these really crappy paper wrappings that were like open on both sides, and just the books would come mangled and we'd just steal them out of the box. So I read in the 80s just a ton of Marvel stuff. I'm trying to think what my mother... She had really weird taste, too. Like, we would read X-Men, but she'd get West Coast Avengers, but not the regular Avengers. It's just really, really random. She was into Power Pack. It's just really, really weird stuff that she choose to subscribe to. But so we read a ton of stuff back then, and I read pretty consistently after that point. I picked up on my own, and for birthdays and stuff, she'd buy me collections of stuff. And back then, there weren't that many collections of things, but every once in a while, it was a trade for Daredevil Born Again, that kind of thing. And then at some point, weirdly, I had a cousin who was working for DC, I think, in marketing, and would just send me huge boxes of comps. And she had, it was hilarious because she was in marketing, but she had absolutely no interest in comics. And she just sent me these huge boxes of like these amazing I didn't read a ton of DC stuff until I was older, but all the Batman stuff, that was around the time of the Burton movies. And the buzz on Batman was obviously very, very high. So she just sent me these huge Batman hardcovers, these boxes of just amazing stuff. So I definitely read a bunch of Batman, at least back then, which I guess is probably true of most comic fans, whether or not they're Marvel or DC fans, they have probably read a ton of Batman at some point. So yeah, that was about it. When I got into high school years, I think I was a little more fixated on girls, and I didn't really read comics for a bit. And then weirdly got back into it almost within 2 years of starting to write. I picked it back up, and that I don't remember exactly, what turned me on to it, but I got back into it. And at that point, there was some interesting career-owned stuff going on. There was some interesting one-off Marvel and DC stuff that was a little more eclectic. And at that point, it was around the dot-com boom, and I was working for a dot-com, so I had a little bit of disposable income. So I just ended up buying an absurd amount of comics and diving in with both feet. And I started writing pretty soon after that.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, my experience parallels yours pretty much. My mom was the one that got me interested in comics. She was a big sci-fi fan. She loved Star Trek. She loved all those kinds of things. And I found a comic in the basement that had Batman. And Batman was in London or in the UK, and he built this frame that he put onto his back, and he glided through the air and went around looking at this castle, trying to monitor this castle somehow. And I remember reading that when I was like 5 or 6, and Frank Miller says what his first Batman comic he pulled out, he started reading, he fell in, and that was my experience too. And like you also, I read for a long time, and then when I got around high school, I dropped out for a while. My brother continued on, but it took me a while before I got back into them again. But I've been reading them ever since, and I like them. Batman's my favorite character. I've always admit to that, that he's the guy that I like. That's why when you wrote a Two-Face story, I was really enjoying that. But do you have any characters that you're partial to or that you really like?
Yeah, it's funny. If you'll allow me a digression, it's funny because I had a sort of argument, is a strong word, but I had a long conversation with another friend of mine, a comics artist. We were talking about the idea of people following creators versus characters, and we sort of went back and forth on it. And I think creators like to think, and rightly so, that the readers follow them or that it's there. But I think also a huge amount of the business of comics, the American business of comics, is superhero stuff. And I think it's fair to assume that I think a lot of people are going to be inclined through their own childhood or through whatever with comics, almost more like you would an action figure, meaning you're just a big fan of Batman, and sometimes I think there's ebb and flow. Sometimes there's good Batman comics, sometimes there's bad Batman comics, but you're rooting for Batman. The idea that even when, you know, there's a great, whatever, Grant Morrison run or what have you, it's almost like you're a sports fan and you're just really hoping they get a really good pitcher, but you're still going to, you know what I'm saying? You're still going to be into it. You're still hoping for it.
I can tell you a real quick experience. There was a time when I despised what Batman was doing. He was dating Damona, and that she was like a vampire. And just before Crisis on Infinite Earths hit, she flew off into this balloon and disappeared into the sky, and he was fighting villains like Calendar Man and stuff. At the comic store, I had just gotten back into them, and the comic store I was at, they said, if you can add 2 or 3 more comics, you'd get a bigger discount. So I looked around, and there was really nothing else I wanted, and I said, well, okay, I'll put the Batman books on. And it was right after that that Frank Miller's Dark Knight came out. And so I was lucky I was in at that point, but believe me, before that, even though I was a Batman fan, I was not very much into the comics. Now, you talk about creators versus characters. In my mind, there's a balance. I'll follow a lot of creators because I enjoy their work, but I'm also partial to some characters, so even if I'm not quite certain that this will be good, I'll pick up a Batman book. Like, there was recently this hardcover. It was Batman going into Alice in Wonderland, and I spent the $22, and when I got it home, I was just like, ugh, why did I buy this book? For $22, I got like a 1 out of 10 type of comic. So I'll still do that. I'll take a chance, though, still.
Right. The thing that I ended up arguing with my friend is I think that's totally fair. I think as people get older, they probably end up factoring in the behind the scenes and the creators and so on past a certain point. But my point was the most successful Batman iteration in any medium so far is the Bruce Timm Batman animated show.
Oh, yes.
And
oh, yes.
It was a great, great show, but it's not like you chose which one you were going to watch based on who wrote it. It's at that point, it's a great show, and there have been better shows and worse shows. I mean, not better, but there have been worse shows and so on. But I don't think it's unreasonable for someone to say, hey, I like Batman. Batman's fun. And you can go back and say, well, that's based on the work of Bob Kane or what have you. And it's also not unreasonable. My point is, I think with stuff like that, when you're dealing with things that have been produced for 70 years and so on and so forth, I actually think it makes more sense from a business perspective that Batman should be marketed to people who like Batman versus people who like Grant Morrison. So anyway, I just think it's an interesting discussion. But yeah, I mean, obviously Batman, I think, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And there have been conversations about me doing other things in the future with the Batman office, and it's definitely an exciting, exciting thing for me. I am a huge fan of Iron Man. I've always weirdly connected with. I think Iron Man is a nice, maybe in a lot of ways, a nice sort of crossover character, and that he's this really sort of self-made guy who, rather than Superman, who's a god from space, Iron Man's just a guy who sort of chooses and creates his ability to be Superman, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I've always connected with that specific character. Spider-Man, I also think, is the classic, the old stuff, the miserable, sad Spider-Man. On a couple of times that I've been able to write anything to do with Spider-Man, that's always been a huge, huge, huge amount of fun. It's actually weirdly addictive, and you have to tone back and not just write jokes. for an entire comic.
Is it hard for you as a creator to read other books and not think, well, I would have done this or I could go this direction with that? Is it hard just to be a consumer now that you're actually a writer of comics? Has that changed the way that you appreciate comics?
Yes and no. I think it goes in waves, and sometimes you can sort of sit down. I tend to plug out of reading things. I don't, unfortunately, go to the shop every week anymore. I don't even go necessarily every month. So I'll usually just go and sort of binge and read a ton of things. And I think that that allows me to maybe detach myself a little bit and not to be like working in a kitchen and just watching people cook all the time. Mm-hmm. I think I'm able to hopefully sit back and decompress and immerse myself in it more as a fan and as a reader than someone who makes them. But sometimes I can't do that, and that's kind of why I plug out of it. I end up being a little too mercurial as a reader and judging it. And it's not even sort of an ego thing of thinking I could do better, but just thinking like, oh, they could have done better. Or mm-hmm. I tend not to be exceptionally competitive, but I do look at stuff and say, like, there was probably a better way to go with that. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that I could have accomplished it, but I think there was a different way that that person should have or could have gone. Mm-hmm. But I do think it definitely, unfortunately, the more you work on the comics, it is a little harder to enjoy them the same way. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that it's definitely something I miss. It sort of weighs on you a little bit. Like, you know, wouldn't it be better almost to disconnect and just sit and, you know, read this stuff and not have to worry about making it and worry about mm-hmm. measuring things on such weird esoteric levels.
Mm-hmm. But you've been a creator of characters as well as, you know, writing for established characters. So, I mean, yeah. You'd created Viking and all those good things. So you can do both of those. So I'm sure that you prefer to work with your characters because they're basically your children. So
yeah, I prefer it in a way, and in some ways I don't. Look, ideally, I would love to be able to let the same way I think a chef would rather own his own restaurant. I would much rather create my thing and be able to support my family based on things that I've done and created. But by the same token, I did a 40-page Machine Man sort of serial shorts that I did, which is like one of the most fun things that I've ever written and one of the things that I'm proudest of. In a perfect idealized world, I would think that my best work would be create our own stuff, but I don't think we get to necessarily choose those things. As an idealist, as a person, I think I would rather work on that stuff, but in the moment, as a creator, you never know what's going to spark you. And sometimes even my favorite stuff, my babies, can be miserable experiences where it's like pulling teeth and I can only do a page in a week, you know, and sometimes working on something that I didn't create will just completely open the floodgates and invite a really personal reaction from me and allow me to do work that I connect with on a level that I wouldn't think going into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we start talking about the ones that you created, like Viking. Can you tell me a little bit about Viking? Because that was a really unique comic, I have to say, very different. And it's available in hardcover, so if people want to get it, they can certainly buy it that way. It's such a unique take on the Viking experience. It like takes a modern circumstance and injects it into a historical setting. So how did Viking come to be?
I've got a couple weird memories of what might have actually sparked the idea to do a Viking thing at all. But I think once I decided to do the Viking thing, I became really particular about how I wanted to express it and sort of the language that I wanted to use. And by language, I don't even mean necessarily just words, but the packaging and the way that it was expressed as a property or as an object. And at the time, comics had all started to go up to $4. And I was pretty strongly opposed to that. And so part of what I wanted to do was, I don't know if you were able to see the issues or if you just saw it in the hardcover, but either way, you saw that every version is huge. Mm-hmm. The comic versions were larger than normal comic size. The trade is big, and the hardcover is the biggest of all. And what I wanted to express is that I didn't want to empower the market, I guess, on that level to the point where the market defines we have to tone back and use lesser paper and so on and to charge more money. I feel like that's a backwards way to engage readers. So what I wanted to do is make the loudest packaging that I could and something big that looked like it was worth $5 and only charged $3 when everyone else was charging $4. So that was part of my inspiration just on a cosmetic level. Beyond that also, I think Viking content up until that point was, or I guess traditionally, was something that was very niched, and I think that people associated it with you were a specific kind of like Dungeons and Dragons nerd to be into that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I thought that sort of limited the potential of who I could speak to and what kinds of stories that I could tell. So I really blatantly wanted to use very modern design and very just really present it in the way. I mean, as an analogy I always use is when I was a kid, Westerns were very much not in fashion for kids. Mm-hmm. And I remember that Westerns were a thing that your dad would watch on Sunday at 11 a.m. by himself. and everybody else would clear the room. And then when I got a little older, Deadwood happened, and Deadwood became this thing that everyone could enjoy. And it became this non-genre specific, this non-niched kind of storytelling, this very modern thing. That's a huge inspiration for me in terms of the way that I wanted to tell that kind of story. So I wanted to tell something that was a period piece, but that didn't depend on fans of the period. And I dislike content that caters to a niche. I like the idea. Like, for me, I'm always targeting not the comic fan, but his girlfriend, if that makes any sense. You know,
okay,
I want to appeal to people who don't read comics.
Right. Right. Well, what I enjoyed about it was that this was very much of a mobster kind of setup back in the Viking days, that this sort of mentality existed in the past. And the art was gorgeous, too. And as I remember, I think the first issue sold out before it hit the stores, didn't it?
It's funny because we were really terrified about the format. And I was really keeping tight-lipped about announcing it and specifically explaining it, because it's this weird thing that's hard to verbally explain. But then once you see it, it has an impact. And so I was really being really tight-lipped because I thought the retailers were going to flip out of me. And then as it happened, Image went out with the book a couple weeks before, I think 3 weeks before it launched, to a retailer summit. Mm-hmm. And the retailers had the opposite reaction and flipped out and started, like, on the spot. It was a Friday night at like 11 p.m. started just ordering huge amounts of copies and sold us out pretty much on the spot.
Wow.
And it was just this really funny thing. I think this thing that I was terrified about, I thought the fans would really dig it, but I thought the retailers would be really skeptical. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the times that I'm happiest to be wrong, because it's the retailers embraced it and were super excited. And I would get so many notes and phone calls and people saying it's just funny that, like, it just people saying they'd been waiting for that sort of thing. It was my impression that, like, I think people would be terrified to change formats and to do that kind of thing. It was just a funny thing to me. My inspiration really was just a Viking comic doesn't have to be presented the same way a Captain America comic is presented. Mm-hmm. They're not the same kind of content. They're not the same kind of thing. They're published on paper with staples, but that's pretty much the only similarity. It didn't make sense to me to try to physically present them the same way.
Mm-hmm. Now, Cross Bronx was another unique comic, because you had cops, and the guy looks sort of like Commissioner Gordon in a sense, and he's dealing with the supernatural, which is way out of his league. I did notice that in a lot of your books, people are way out of their league or are in way over their head, and they struggle to try to survive, and I like that about the stories that you tell a lot. I saw the same thing in the Two-Face story. He's struggling. The whole city's after him, trying to get a hold of him, because somebody has put out a bounty on his head, and it's called The Long Way Down, and it was just fascinating to me. I mean, he ends up in the drink, you know, in the water, and a fisherman pulls him up and stuff, and I started to feel really sorry for Two-Face, which I have never really felt terribly sorry for, you know, Harvey Dent before. But that
right.
miniseries was really cool, because at the end of it, I thought I had a different feeling towards the character when you got done with that.
Yeah, I was honestly really surprised with what they allowed me to do with Two-Face.
Mm-hmm.
It was my goal to basically take everything away from him and have the city that he depended on for strength, to have the city itself turn against him. And I think I just connect with those kinds of human obstacles. It's all a question of relativity and proportion, but I think we've all felt enormous pressure in those kinds of situations. And I think that humans have the most interesting reactions in those contexts. So to me, that's always what fascinates me. In the situation of the Cross Bronx, it's more important to me to figure out what an average guy with faults would do than to figure out what a hero would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always what I connect with. It's more interesting and it's more identifiable for me to see what a person, for example, that people might not like, a person that people might think is a bad person, how he might do something heroic or vice versa, that kind of thing. I think there's gray areas where you don't have a person who's just infallible and expected to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have someone who has made mistakes and upset people and whatever, mm-hmm. and those people then sort of have to elevate themselves, or vice versa. There's always a gray area, I think, in every kind of person. A lot of people think of themselves as the hero in their story,
mm-hmm.
but nobody ever thinks of themselves as the villain.
Mm-hmm.
You and I might have a person that we hate, but in their mind, they don't see it the same way.
Right.
You know, they think they're the hero of their story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of gray area between their perception and your perception and just how the world is perceived and interacted with, to me, that stuff is fascinating. And I think it's fodder for very, very interesting character stories.
How did you get to do the Two-Face story? I mean, did you have to pitch it? How did this work?
It was kind of a weird thing. I had been talking with the Batman office about doing another thing, and the other thing just didn't happen. We were trying to figure out a different thing, and it just, you know, sort of a last-minute thing. We were just sitting there in the office, and what if we do this? And you know, we just ran with it. And it was published weirdly because there were scheduling issues with the other story in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It just came together very, very quickly and very oddly, but in a way that I was able to have a lot of fun with it. I've got a very good relationship with, at the time it was Michael Martzen and Janelle Siegel, Janelle Aslan, who has since moved on, but you know, I've got a great relationship with Mike still, and then we'd talk about doing other things. But yeah, it was just a weird happenstance. It wasn't something we were planning for a long time. It's just a fun thing that came to be, and to me it was a natural fit to deal with the crime aspect and to deal with a more human. You remember at the time, Two-Face in the books was walking around with these like armored henchmen.
Yeah.
And it was sort of the opposite of what I ended up doing with him. And to me, my instinct was just to flip that on its ear and just really humanize him, break him down, and take his things away with him. And I think I mentioned earlier, like Daredevil Born Again, where you can identify the character by having him lose all of his strengths and have to re-earn his mantle. And I think that it was important to establish who Two-Face is by taking away all the ways that we think of him.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it's a human thing that people connect with. I remember having a car accident 15 years ago or so, and you sort of have to sit and figure out who you are, because all the things that you usually do are gone and you're just sort of sitting there immobile. And I think people don't often have to face who they are. And as a way to work with character in a story, I think that to me anyway, is very compelling. And hopefully I'm able to express it to the level that it affects me, basically.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things you've also done a lot of is you've participated in big events, like you wrote part of Secret Invasion, and then you also were part of the Final Crisis in DC. What's it like participating in that?
No, I was going to say, I think I'm the only comic guy who somehow, those events were simultaneous, and Marvel and DC don't always play nice, so I think I'm the only guy that somehow managed to be involved in both things, but it's great. They were both very different, really, really interesting to work with, and it was interesting to work and see sort of behind the scenes and work Brian Bendis, who wrote the Marvel event, and Brett Morrison, who wrote the DC event, and to be able to sort of look at those scripts and see the behind the scenes as they were happening was really interesting. And it's not something that I had been able to do up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Just see the sort of the depth of the world that both of those guys were building was really, really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's a weird logistical game in terms of figuring out what your play set is and what sort of toys you can use.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're working in something that's that immersive into the company, I think it's hard. If Brian is using this character on 6th Ave, I can't have that character on 7th Ave, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting logistical hurdle, because you have to work logistics into your work more than I often would have to, versus just figuring out, hey, I want to use this character and put them here.
Mm-hmm.
So that does present interesting challenges. The other thing to say is often those weird logistical obstacles create situations that you wouldn't have thought of,
mm-hmm.
and spark kinds of creativity that you wouldn't necessarily have come to if you were just doing a story by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, most recently, you've been writing Men of War for DC's New 52, and I know that book's coming to an end. I enjoyed the story. I bought all 52 of them. I'm a big DC fan, so I'll tend to do that. And I'll, even with the replacement ones, I'll be buying that. But I enjoyed the story that you and Tom Duranik told. I happen to know Tom Duranik because he's from my hometown in Pennsylvania. And so I always like his art. And I thought that your working with him brought a really strong story out in a genre that I don't think comics go to very often anymore. And that's the war comics. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Now that that's kind of come to a close, how that worked for you or what happened?
Yeah, I think it was an interesting project for us, because I think Tom and I, we don't necessarily think alike. The pairing forced us both to work in ways that we hadn't necessarily worked before.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. We're just polar opposites in terms of the way we present things usually.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really, really cool and interesting to work with, to try to sort of see the world through Tom's eyes, and I think vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. And look, I thoroughly enjoyed working on the book and working specifically on hopefully a book that appealed to either people who were fans of war stories. It's weird to say that, fans of war stories, because, you know, to be a fan of violence or what have you. But obviously there are people who enjoy that, and I'm one of them, people who enjoy, for the same reasons, the idea of human perseverance in the midst of something hugely difficult and something uncontrollable.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun to think of the emotional arc of these characters and how they might have to struggle with physical things and also mental things. No, it was great fun for me. It's been really fulfilling also to be able to do a book that has appealed to a lot of members of the military. I got actually emails today even. Mm-hmm. My last issue came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting emails of people who really enjoyed it and are expressing thanks. It's a unique thing to be able to speak to people in that way. It was important to me to work on that particular book, because I thought that book had a lot of outreach potential. to speak to an audience outside of DC's usual comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I liked about issue 6, which just came out, is that you actually talk about war. You have two characters talking. You have Rock versus the quote-unquote villain of the piece, and they discuss between the two of them what war is all about and how war happens and the whole business. It really, in my mind, summarized the whole six-issue arc really well, and I thought that was such a well-written thing, because sometimes discussions in a comic can be really boring, you know, and two people are talking to each other, it's dull. But this, to me, was a really gripping philosophical discussion about what war is all about and what it means. So I really liked that a lot, and I thought that was a great way to end the six-issue arc, honestly. So I want to tell you I liked that a lot.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. At the end of the day, it's not up to soldiers to determine what's right or what's wrong. Mm-hmm. They have a specific job to do. It was really important to me not to make the book political in any way and not really have the characters express any kind of leanings one way or another, because it's not really their purpose. They're there to do a difficult and very important job. I thought it might be interesting to present that in terms of the characters and the honesty of why they do what they do. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you dug it. At the time, also, I had just made the decision to leave the book, and I'd originally intended to write more, so I had to wrap it up. And so, yeah, you get sort of super self-conscious on last issue, so I'm glad you dug it.
Yeah, it was really good, so I liked that a lot. There's a couple things I want to talk with you about before we wrap up. You have a great blog in which you talk about the comics industry a lot, and there's some things you bring out. You made a point, and it makes me smile when I read about it, is the fact that fans know too much about comics in the industry and the people who work in it. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that? Because, you know, in this information age, too much information, how can it possibly be? You have a really good point to make, and I'd like for you to elaborate a little on that.
I will try. It's not the most fully formed point, but I often think, and look, I'm a guy who's out there pretty often. And I'm pretty vocal on Twitter and on my blog, so I'm as guilty of creating this environment as anyone. But I often think, and it sort of goes back to what you were saying in terms of, do I enjoy reading comics anymore? And I think past a certain point when you've seen the sausage being made, it's hard to keep that innocent point of view as a reader. And I think it's harder for me. And I think often we end up focusing on the tree rather than the forest, so to speak. We end up trying to figure out, we as an industry, meaning the fans, the creators, everyone, end up really obsessed on mercurial details that have nothing to do with, to me, the core purpose or conceit of comics, which is this a good comic? Was this a good experience? Mm-hmm. We end up weirdly worrying about what physical process the people involved with the comic might have gone through. I had an interesting exchange with people talking about fill-in artists and schedules, and it was interesting. Like, people come to a lot of conclusions without all the information, and people assume things about how something might have been planned or what the schedule might have been or where things might have fallen through. Mm-hmm. Although very rarely any of that information is available. And it just, to me, I just often think that perhaps it's too transparent, but in a way that sort of inspires, it's hard to explain. It's like you have a conversation and they assume they know everything about you, that kind of thing. And I think that I don't know. To me, the older I get as a creator, the less compelling those conversations become sometimes. And to me, I often feel like at that point, all we do is see the sausage made. We never actually eat the sausage. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Well, the thing that gets me is we are in an era where people are devoted to the cult of personality. Sports, we know everything to know about these people. We know what they had for breakfast. We know what their shoe size is. We know all this stuff. And the truth of the matter is, to me, say the Super Bowl is right around this time. And to me, I don't want to know any of that stuff. There are hours of programming talking about everybody before the game actually starts. The pregame stuff starts 10, 11 in the morning, and the game doesn't start after 6 o'clock. So you're sitting watching all this stuff more than I ever wanted to know about these people. I just want to watch the game and enjoy the game. And so I think you make a valid point in the fact that because we live in this kind of a culture now, people want to know everything about everybody. We want to know, why did you write this the way that you did? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? At some points, I think there are good points to be made about these, but I think there's, at a certain point, you just have to like it or you don't. And I think we're too busy criticizing and being critical of people, which I don't like. If there's something I don't like, I tend not to talk about it. I'd rather talk about things I do. But there's a culture that says we need to really hammer on things because we don't like them, and that's the thing that I particularly don't enjoy.
Right. I understand the inclination. I think, look, there's something to be said. Ultimately, perhaps the story of the industry has become more interesting than the stories in the comics. And maybe that's our fault as an industry also. I don't know if that's true, but there are people who may think that way. And I think if the comics were as a whole more exciting, then maybe people wouldn't worry about the story of the writer and the artist who might have been fighting, or the editor, or whomever. To me, we're more obsessed with those stories. And again, maybe it's a quality thing. And maybe we've, on average, our stories aren't so exciting to the point where the audience has had to seek other information. But I also think as a culture, we've become perhaps too entitled and have decided that we are entitled to every kind of information in every context. And I think that is, I don't know. I'm not saying it's not valuable, and people are entitled to want whatever they want, but I don't think that they are necessarily entitled to, they're entitled to want those things, but I don't know that they're necessarily entitled to have those things. And I think that the more we've sort of embraced that kind of dialogue, I think that, I don't know, I think arguably it has created more problems than, look, I think that the modern era of comics has certainly also been helped by the internet and by sort of social discourse between the business and the readership. But I think we've maybe gone too far in the other direction to where you have the audience wanting to see into the bedroom of comics.
Mm-hmm. On television, I can understand sometimes what happens behind the camera influences what we see on the camera. And at times it's good to know that. But I guess you're right to some degree. Maybe some of the people are not as interested in the books themselves. And I know a lot of people who buy things, and the moment they go home with them, they never crack them open. They bag and board them immediately. Have no idea if there's blank pages in that book or not. But they're so intent on collecting them that they're more worried about what are people doing that's going to impact my investment. And so to me, I've always been a comics reader. There's no book that I've ever taken home that I haven't opened up and read, because that's the whole point of this to me, is the reading, is the telling of stories. You guys are the modern minstrels who go around telling stories that you can't tell anywhere else, really. Even television or movies haven't reached the level that a writer and an artist can put together on a comic. And I think that sometimes we are too critical of the process and not as interested in the final results. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. I think, again, we're in a weird entitlement society. We are also in a society where everybody thinks they know everything, meaning everybody thinks they know, on a professional level, things about all the businesses that they interact with. And, I just think it's a strange creature we've all created, and I'm not always sure that it's a useful dialogue.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that one. Now, as far as moving forward as the projects you've got in the future, I know you're at a point where you really can't talk a lot about some of the things that are not in stages where you can announce them, but we'll keep an eye out to see what's coming up. The one thing I'm interested in is you referred to Viking as a season one. Could there be a season two or more Viking coming in the future?
Yeah. There will be. There are weird sort of logistical hurdles that we have to overcome based on, not even entirely on comics, and it's kind of hard to be less vague than that. But there's other stuff going on, and it affects our ability to do or to announce a second season. But we definitely have a second season planned. Nick and I are both committed to doing that. It's taking longer than we had intended, but absolutely there will be a second season of Viking, hopefully sooner rather than later. Otherwise, what I'm doing, what I can say for sure, is that I'm immersing myself in the creator-owned world more so than I have pretty much ever since I started out in comics. So I think that this year is hopefully going to be about, for a lot of people, creating original works and connecting with the audience in a more direct way versus through marketing and versus through distribution and that sort of thing. And I think that I'm definitely focusing on communicating directly with the readers that I've been able to connect with over the years, people that follow me, and tell hopefully more, I say original, but original always sounds like an arrogant word to me, but hopefully more unique stories, more different kinds of stories than I have told before, and hopefully different than what other people are telling right now. So I'm involved in a pretty huge initiative creator-wise, and I also have a couple interesting projects that are for other companies. But my focus, where my heart is this year, for sure, first and foremost, is in original content and creator-owned material. So hopefully I'll do some stuff that people might be interested in.
Now, one last question. I always ask everybody this. Digital versus paper. Where do you think we're going to go in the next several years?
I really don't think it's a versus argument. I think it's a major flaw in the thinking of our business that people have drawn that line. To me, I see the market largely to be more the way one would look at one country versus another country. You sell comics to China, but you can also sell them to Japan. And I think some people just consume their media digitally across the board. I think there are a lot of younger, and I don't even necessarily mean younger in terms of their personal age, but just in terms of their approach. There are people who pretty much only consume their entertainment through an iPad. And I think it's important to be able to speak speak to those people, and it's important to be able to tell stories that they might want to hear. But I also think people find that to be troublesome in terms of the print market, and I think that that's fair. I think it's in some ways misguided, but I also think, more importantly to me, I think that it also forces everyone to create product that is valuable as an object. And it goes back to what I was saying about Viking. If people are concerned about whether or not they can survive in a digital world, or whether, I think it forces at that point for you to bring something to your paper product that digital can't provide. I don't envy anyone their anxiety, but I think that comics is at its strongest when it is defensive, meaning comics as the popular, successful jock, so to speak, is to me the least interesting. And comics, when it is scared and needs to work harder and guarantee success by virtue of doing its best work, I think to me that is the most interesting time for comics. Again, I don't wish anybody any kind of hardship, but I think that if anyone is feeling it, that will hopefully inspire them to do the best possible work, the most unique possible work. I don't think entertainment is a competition, but I think you have to be as exciting as the other guy, meaning I think there's a reason why video games sell so well, and there's an excitement level that I don't think is necessarily so related to price. I think people go out to buy a video game on a Tuesday at midnight for $60, even though they know it's going to be $30 the next month after, and I think that reason is excitement. And I think if we as an industry focus more on excitement and less on weird boogeymen of what might be hurting us and why we might not be successful, and instead focus on being successful, you see what I'm saying? I think that that's a much more productive way to go. And I think, look, it all comes down to, I think, the thesis of almost every topic we've discussed today is we should focus on making great comics. I think if we do focus on great comics, you can see any level of success in print, in digital, in audio, anywhere we want to go, I think any of that is possible if we focus on that and we don't focus on who's fighting with whom and focus on what might be hurting us and all that stuff. I think an offensive approach is go out and win is what I say. I think we live in a world where you can make digital comics, you can make print comics, you can make any kind of comics, you can make comics on cardboard and on plastic. And I think our biggest weakness is that we've gotten so mired into making comics as if they are something that can be created in a plant. And I think that that is probably going to change. And I think that that change is probably for the better.
Well, great. You've given me a lot and my listeners a lot to think about, and I really appreciate that, Ivan, and look forward to seeing your quality stuff in the future. So I wish you a lot of success, and I'll have to, it'd be fun to talk with you again sometime. This is a really very thoughtful discussion. I like that kind of stuff.
Thank you, Wynn. I appreciate it.
So take care, and please keep us advised as to what's coming, because we want to know what you're working on next.
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as I know, everyone else will know. There should be announcements pretty soon, and again, I'm pretty excited about the way this year is going.
Okay, sounds great. So thanks.
Thank you, Wynn. Thanks for your time.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review,
dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Let's take a look at the comics that came out this week. The book I want to highlight is Avengers Academy number 25. It's a very interesting comic, and I've liked this one ever since it was suggested to me by Sam Johnson of Deadpool fame. Christos Gage, who writes the book, has a lot of fun with the teen characters, making them actually really teens, and he also incorporates quite a lot of history of the Avengers involved, so it makes it a good read. Tom Grummett has long been an artist that I've enjoyed over the years. He's worked on Teen Titans, Superboy, and Thunderbolts, among other books. He has a nice, clear, crisp style that's easily understood, so he fits the comic really well. Giant Man is in charge, Henry Pym, and I think the characters are fun to read, so I hope that you'll pick up Avengers Academy number 25. The New 52 books are also really good. Detective Comics continues to shine with fascinating plot twists and interesting characterizations. Action Comics number 6 focuses on Superman and the Legion of Superheroes. Animal Man is very creative with a big twist about 3/4 of the way through the book that I liked. Swamp Thing wonders if Alec Holland is too late to save Abby. Then I liked Batwing, which is setting up the hero's journey to Gotham City. Speaking of the Dark Knight, he again plays an important role in Justice League International number 6, which is an epilogue to the previous storyline. Red Lanterns is something special this month, focusing on the human Red Lantern. Ooh, he's a little scary. Hawk and Dove has Batman and Robin guest starring. Stormwatch has another great Paul Cornell story in the latest Green Arrow, Keith Giffen wraps up his two-issue tale. Next, I enjoyed Men of War with Ivan Brandon, who you just heard an interview with. OMAC is full of fun and action. Static Shock featured the return of Hardware and Technique, and I'm really sorry this book is coming to an end, because I was hoping to see more of those milestone characters. Other books worth your attention are Batman Gates of Gotham trade paperback, and Supernatural number 5 of 6 from DC. Vale and the Outcast, a terrific book. Irredeemable number 34, and Betrayal of the Planet Apes number 4 from Boom Studios. Venom number 13 from Marvel. Fatale number 2, and Invincible number 88 from Image. Lock and Key Clockworks number 4 from IDW, another great comic, as well as Warlord of Mars annual number 1 and Warrior of Mars number 1 from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
This is Mark Waid.
Hi, this is Amanda Tapping.
Hello, I'm Steve Pugh.
And you can catch them all right here on SFP Now. Join us at sfp-now.com.
Casaza's back with me from Big Planet Comics. How are you doing today, Pete?
Oh, pretty good. Not too bad.
Good. Now, we're off to an interesting start for January of 2012. How do things do in your store?
Pretty well, actually. I was really happy with January. In some respects, actually, it was a better month than December was. We had a lot of people coming in and buying new comics, catching up on some of the DC comics they'd missed. So, very strong month for us, especially in comic book sales.
Okay. How did graphic novels do?
They did okay. Disappointing from last year. Graphic novels are still considered slightly expensive, and people are tight on money. So comics right now seem to be selling a little better than graphic novels. I think mostly it's content, the excitement of the new DC, and the affordability of comics just compared to graphic novels.
It's interesting you should say that, because the numbers came out from Diamond, I think, and Newsarama was reporting them, that Marvel was the top as far as money-making went, but DC actually had the top 10. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? How does that work? I mean, Marvel basically sells more, makes you more money, but you sell more DCs?
Yes, but Marvel also costs us more. We pay 10 or 20 cents or 30 cents more per Marvel comic. We sell them for more money. So if we sell them, we make a little bit more on them, but it also costs us a little bit more. In DC, we're selling a lot of numbers, especially in my store. We're selling a lot more DC comics than we are Marvel comics. I think 9 out of my 10 top sellers were DC comics, and the numbers were pretty high, especially for Justice League, Action Comics, Batman. Those sell really high numbers. So I probably make a little bit more money. Certainly my Marvel bills are a little higher than my DC bills, but I haven't really done the fine detail of the numbers to find out which I actually make more money on, because I sell more DCs, but Marvel's cost a little bit more, so I haven't done all the calculations.
Now, you said 9 out of the 10 are DC books. What's the top Marvel book?
Ultimate Spider-Man does very well, but the X-Men relaunch also does very well for us. So Uncanny and Wolverine and the X-Men, both are selling very well, all three of those.
Oh, great. As far as other companies go, what books are selling for you that are not DC or Marvel?
The Image titles are doing very well. Walking Dead, Invincible. They've come out with some new Image titles that have done pretty well. Whisper by Jonathan Luna did okay for us. And there's another one that's escaping me right this second. The Ed Brubaker title that just came out.
Oh, Fatale.
Fatale, that's it. That's done very well for us.
Oh, really? That's interesting, because those creators are from Marvel originally, or most recently, and they've actually started out doing this. So I'm glad to hear that that's
Yeah, anything that's non-superhero that's doing by good writers and artists is doing pretty well. Image is doing very well with that, trying to really cash in on the non-superhero market. DC and Marvel are dominating the superhero market greatly, but there is a lot of room for non-superhero stuff by smaller publishers.
Interesting. Well, we had a big announcement this past week about the Before Watchmen series that's going to be coming out. And you were telling me that you're in the minority on this. What opinion do you have about that?
A lot of retailers seem to think it's a good chance for them to make a lot of money. Some of them feel it's morally reprehensible and they shouldn't do it, but they have no say and it's a good chance to make money. I'm not convinced it's a good chance to make money for us. In my store, a lot of my customers, a surprising number of my customers, haven't read Watchmen. mm-hmm. and they only know it through the movie, which was mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who really, really love Watchmen are going to be very tentative about this. Mm-hmm. Like everybody else, I'm really impressed with the creative talent they've lined up for these series. Mm-hmm. But with a series of miniseries, I just don't see it being a blockbuster hit. I really don't see that. It's not going to sell like it's Justice League number one or Action number one or any of those new DC titles. Mm-hmm. It's going to sell more like a mid-range or a lower-tier DC relaunch, I think. Mm-hmm. Something more like the Flashpoint miniseries or maybe the Seven Soldiers of Victory that Grant Morrison did a number of years ago. Those were four or seven miniseries. He did four issues each. Those did well, but I don't know that we made a ton of money on. And I have a feeling DC is paying these creative people a lot of money to do these series. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they're going to make their money back in the sales. But I don't know. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. So you won't be ordering really heavily on them then?
Yeah, I mean, some of the creators like Adam Hughes doing interior pages, that could be beautiful. And I would like to get a fair number of those. But I'm not going to order anywhere near what I ordered on Justice League number one or Action number one. That's, or Batman, any of the Batman titles. So yeah, I'm definitely ordering conservative. So we'll see. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I think for my store, mm-hmm. I don't see a huge appeal. I see the X-Men vs. Avengers. It's doing much better for me. It's an easier sell. It's, you don't have to explain what it is. You don't have to try to convince people to try Watchmen, which, although it's my favorite and the greatest graphic novel I've written, it is a big, thick book. And some people aren't in the mood to commit themselves to something because they don't know how awesome it is. I mean, once they read it, they're usually blown away by it, but getting people to commit to that when they never have is sometimes hard. Mm-hmm. Avengers vs. X-Men, that's an easy sell. That's a slam dunk, and I think those numbers are going to be spectacular for us, certainly for my store. That's my impression. Okay. Again, I could be wrong. I often am, but those are my impressions.
Well, you know, if this was a science, everybody would be doing it, so it's something of an
and
art.
Really, really wealthy. We'd all be wealthy and everyone be doing it.
That's right. In the last month since we've talked, DC also canceled several of the titles that were the lower tier ones, including OMAC and Black Hawks, Static Shock, and Mr. Terrific amongst them. There are four others, Men of War included. What was your take on that when they announced that those were being canceled?
Well, I was sad to see Static Shock and Mr. Terrific get canceled. They were doing okay in my story. I mean, Static Shock had some story issues, and that one maybe should have started with a clean reboot instead of drawing some past stuff in. But a lot of the other titles, they just weren't selling, and I totally understand. Certainly Hawk and Dove and OMAC. I kind of liked OMAC myself. I found that somewhat appealing and different, but the sales were never very strong on that book. So it is kind of the business we live in. 8 issues is a pretty good chance for these titles, and they really didn't quite catch on. So, and there will be more cancellations coming at some point. So,
when you say that, do you have some titles in mind?
There are other titles. Grifter, for example, is not catching on, is not getting great reviews. They're changing up the creative team on it, and Stroke is struggling. And there's some other titles that just really aren't gelling. The way Firestorm's another one that comes to mind. It's a great concept, but I don't think the creative team really was committed to this book, and I think it hasn't been well executed up to this point. Now, I think DC's trying to turn that around with new creative people, and they may succeed, but they're definitely not some of the higher seller books anymore.
Now, DC, of course, announced they were going to put some new books in their place, including Earth 2 and the Batman Inc. coming back for that. Do you think that the new ones are going to do well? And which ones of the new books do you think are going to sell well, and which ones do you think might not take off as well as DC hopes?
Again, it's hard to say. You know, it's not a science. You just kind of have to guess how people are going to react and how good the book is. If it's a really good book, we can push it on people and get them to try it. Really help sales. I think it's a good idea. I think new titles is great. There's a huge new world DC has created, and I think they should really explore it. And there's a lot of interesting ideas they can go with. So, yeah, I think this is a good system. Every 6 months, get rid of the slowest sellers and try to give new creative people a chance to sell another story with other characters and really see if we can take off.
Okay. Now, as far as February goes, we're starting into that. How do you think the month of February is going to do for your store?
February is usually the slowest month of the year for most retail, but certainly comic stores especially. It's a short month. And a lot of people are recovering from their Christmas bills still. Mm-hmm. And generally, the publishers don't put out strong product. But I think February is going to be pretty good for us. People are still interested in New 52. I'm still selling number ones. Marvel has got some strong titles coming out, and they're starting to lead up to the Avengers vs. X-Men. X-Men titles have been very strong and well-received. Avengers titles are doing well. They're canceling some of their Deadwood titles that aren't doing that well. In February, will be ending. So I'm pretty optimistic. We're already approaching the summer movie season in some respect. John Carter of Mars starting in the beginning of March. Three Comic Book Days coming, and that's always a huge thing for us, beginning of May. So I'm pretty positive on this year. The first 6 weeks of the year have been really strong for us, and I'm pretty happy with them. So I'm hoping that carries us all the way through the year.
That'd be great. Now, as far as the collected editions of the New 52, some of them are going to be hardcover, some of them are going to be trades. How do you think those are going to sell in your store?
I think pretty well. I'm still selling some Flashpoint hardcover collections and some of the miniseries out of the store, so surprisingly, those have done well. So I actually raised my numbers on the hardcovers and some of the future softcovers that will be coming because they're really good material, especially the hardcovers. I think the material is really strong, and people seem to really be interested in it. And if it's a really good title that they're interested in, they're willing to pay for a hardcover. I like what DC's doing, where the best titles get hardcovers, and the weaker titles go straight to softcover, which I think will be an easier sell for the softcovers.
Mm-hmm. Did you get that $150 book that was hardcover that had all the first issues of the New 52? Did you sell that?
One customer asked for it, and I got them for that customer. I thought it was a cool idea. I just thought the price point was way too high. Mm-hmm. But some people are really into it, and some people really enjoyed it. So for me to carry in the store, though, I thought it was priced a little high.
Okay. Well, why don't you give people your information, where the store is located, and your podcast?
Our podcast you can find either at the Apple Store, and it's Big Planet Comics, or at our website, which is bigplanetcomics.com. And my store is Big Planet Comics in College Park. And the phone number is 301-699-0498. And you can find us on the web as well.
Okay, Pete, we appreciate it very much. We'll talk with you next month and see how things are going. So thanks a lot.
Anytime, Wayne. I appreciate it.
Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm good. Unfortunately, Gianluca couldn't make it. He's been abducted by a weird, mysterious, religious cult who worship the Batman. But we do have investigators out trying to track him down, and we hopefully will have him back next week.
Well, that'll be good. I look forward to him being back. It won't be the same without him, but we'll soldier on. The biggest news that we should be talking about is that DC took all top 10 spots of the comics in January. And that started with number one, of course, was Justice League and Batman, Action Comics, Detective Comics, Green Lantern, Batman the Dark Knight, Superman, The Flash, Batman and Robin, and then number 10 was Aquaman. Now, Marvel also, for the second month in a row, won the dollar share. So this was something of a split decision. But it was good news for DC because to have the top 10 hasn't happened since January of 2005 when Marvel had not only the top 10 but the top 13. Mm-hmm. So this is big stuff. So what was your reaction to it, Ian?
Well, my reaction to it was I'm not really surprised. I mean, there was a little bit of a slump in the December numbers. But that was basically with it being Christmas, and I don't think as many people buy comics at Christmas unless they're actually hardcore comic fans. Mm. So in my eyes, it looks to me like DC's kind of come back a little bit if it's actually a split decision like that, or Marvel slumped.
To me, what I'm hoping is happening, and I've often said this, is that the DC and Marvel numbers will be competitive moving forward. Now, we're 5 months into the New 52. Now, there's some changes happening. Some are being canceled, as we've talked about previously. And we've got some new ones coming in to take their place. My hope is that the new ones will fare better than the eight that have been canceled, those eight titles. So maybe it'll be as competitive as I hope it will be. But this is good news for DC overall. I was really sort of scared to look at the numbers when they came out on Friday the 3rd, and still I was very happy about that. But if you're a Marvel fan, you know, you've got to feel good too that Marvel's making that much money, and they're the top money maker in the month.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not really reading much Marvel right now, so I don't really read much Marvel. You know, if Paul Cornell was suddenly writing something with Marvel, and if it was something that caught me interest in the same way that Captain Britain did, and the Black Widow short story did, I'd probably be reading it, but I tend to follow writers. I don't really follow companies as such.
You know, Captain Britain's in the Secret Avengers now, right?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, he's in there. He's wearing the Alan Davis outfit. So you might want to have a look at that because he's in there. He's part of that. Giant Man, I believe, is in there too. He's the head of the Avengers Academy. He shows up in there as well. I recently wrote a review of Avengers Academy in the DC Comics and Beyond column at scifipulse.net because I wanted to also give a little attention to some of the Marvel books. But I tend to only buy the what I call the fringe books, the Oz books, the Ender's Game and those related books. And I get the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter books, but I don't buy a lot of the mainstream ones. The only ones that I tend to buy are Venom and Avengers Academy. I get Daredevil because Mark Waid writes it. When Avengers vs. X-Men comes up, I'll get one of those. But I won't be buying all the multiple all over the places. I'll be buying the main event books, unless they're a book I buy regularly. Are you planning to buy Avengers vs. X-Men?
Not really, no.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see how this moves forward because there's a lot of stuff going on, and this is an interlude before that. So we'll probably see Marvel pick back up again in a month or two when that hits.
I actually tried, you know, one of the more recent Marvel X-Men a couple of years ago. Just didn't like it. Didn't like where it's gone. Too much flossing about with hair and nippy and relationships and stuff like that. You know, there's no action. I couldn't really invest any time in it at all. This is coming from someone that actually read the original Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko run. And to me, that was X-Men. What we've got now isn't X-Men. Too much Wolverine.
Yeah, well, it's Wolverine and the X-Men, which is actually one of the names of the books. But it's kind of interesting to see how this works going forward. I'm going to be fascinated to figure out. What's your take? Do you think that DC and Marvel will be competitive moving forward?
I wouldn't like to say, but I'd like it to be that way because I don't think it's a good thing when one company is so dominant over the other that the other's more or less wiped out of existence. You need to have two or three big companies up there fighting each other and being competitive with each other. So I'd like it for another company to actually sneak up and rot Marvel out of its complacency and perhaps get a bit of three-way competition going between the companies.
Well, that would be good. So now let's see. You've got a bit of news about Powers. Why don't you go ahead and share that with us?
You've got the TV series of Powers coming up sometime this year. And Brian Michael Bendis, who wrote Powers, was involved with the TV series. But unfortunately, because the TV series came along, it actually took him off the Powers comic book. So he's not been able to do one for about a year. The good news is that on the 8th, of February, Powers issue 8, which continues the arc that Bendis started last year, will return. This is basically what Bendis actually said. Basically what happened was we were heading strong into our last native storyline on Powers. Then, miraculously, after 11 years, someone agreed to pay money to film the book as a television series. I served as an executive producer and was very involved with the other executive producers in all the decisions about bringing this to the screen. We talked about casting and met with all kinds of actors. We were there while the pilot was being filmed, and we were involved in every little decision, like costuming. It was a wonderful experience, but without even realising that I was doing it, the part of my brain that makes Powers comic had switched to the Powers TV show. Right, he went on to explain that he was so laser-focused on the TV series that fans began to accuse him of not caring because there were no new issues of the comic. And it was only when he'd finished work on the TV pilot that he realised he was sat on 4 issues of Michael Oeming's art. Powers issue 8 is at the printer. Issue 9 is being lettered right now, said Bendis, and we'll have 2 more issues coming out in very quick succession. So for people who've never read the book before, there's a bunch coming your way. You'll be able to sink your teeth into. For people who've been waiting patiently, I can't thank you enough. I feel awful about what happened, and please do know that nothing is more important, and a lot of issues will come out in quick succession, so I'll make it up to you on the back end.
Because Powers is an interesting book. The basic premise is that Christian Walker, the main policeman, he clearly looks like a superhero. He's big and Superman-ish or Batman-ish, depending on how you want to talk about the physique. And he's got a partner by the name of Dina Pilgrim. And the two of them basically have to interact with former superheroes, former supervillains as regular cops. And it makes things really kind of interesting. And so the TV series is going to be interesting to see as well. So I think this is one of those comics that will translate well to a TV series.
Well, you know, since I read the news on the TV series, I've not actually read the comic, but when I read the premise for the TV series, which was the same premise as a comic, I thought, this could be interesting, you know, because it's not a superhero show as such. It's kind of like told from a different perspective, you know, and I thought that could actually help it, because a lot of the TV shows that have been on, such as Alphas, Generation X, which was awful, and all those have been sort of like superhero shows. Mm-hmm. And Heroes was like Marvel Comics at its worst. I'm having a bad hair day today. I'm just going to drag this out for 24 episodes. Oh, the world's on the brink of doom and disaster. Oh, we must save the world and get Skyler. The end.
Yeah, that was, we won't go into that. That's a long discussion in its own, but Powers will be coming both in comic and TV form, which is, I think a lot of fans are going to be looking forward to. Let's move on to another news story, and that is Greg Hurwitz is taking over the writing chores on Batman The Dark Knight. Paul Jenkins had been working with David Finch, who's been the artist on that book. Now, Greg Hurwitz, he's been writing one of the new 52 or a miniseries that's come out with it called Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, which I have often said I really like that book. Penguin is one of those lower tier villains who really never seems to work in the modern mythology, but he's done a good job of making him really dark and evil and twisted, so I'm looking forward to what he's going to do. When he gets on The Dark Knight, I think he takes over with issue number 10, and the first villain we're going to run into is the Scarecrow, and he wants to do things similar to the way he's done the Penguin, which means it'll be very interesting. Mr. Finch, I'm sure, like many good people, like John Byrne and other artists who think they can really write, don't necessarily have the ability to do it on a monthly basis. They get great ideas once in a while, and they're great fun to use, but not all the time. And so Mr. Hurwitz is going to be a good addition to the book, I think.
Well, I don't read Dark Knight. The only Batman book I read is Detective, and I'm absolutely loving that. And I'm just going to stick with that, because where you're a big fan of Batman, I'd just rather have one Batman comic in my life so I can actually diversify and read other things, you know, than being too homage with Batman. But the one I'm disappointed about is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. Jeff Lemire is leaving that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how I'm going to adapt to a new writer coming into that.
Well, the guy who's taking over is a person who actually has worked with Lemire in the past. So he's going to be somebody who's good. Jeff Lemire does a book called Sweet Tooth, which I've been reading recently and I've gotten into. And his take is a very weird, off-center take. His Animal Man is great. His other stuff is going to be great. But Peter Milligan is leaving Justice League Dark, and so he's moving over and taking that. So it's going to be a real interesting shift of the chairs around to see how they're going to do this. But I will miss him on Frankenstein. I always enjoyed the fact that sometimes he and one of the fish folks from Shade are in the water, and this light comes on, and there's this huge, huge fish in front of him rather than just something that's equal in size. He used visual cues as well as written ones, so Mr. Lemire is really good. He's going to be writing the last two issues, I think, of Men of War, in which Frankenstein's going to appear there. So I don't think he's going to be done with the Frankenstein character, but he will be doing a lot more on Justice League Dark, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I think Mr. Milligan is moving over to another book, so they're all kind of moving around. I guess they've gotten their feet wet and decided, gee, I'd rather go over here and do these things now that I've told a couple stories.
Like announced a few months back, Paul Cornell is moving on from Stormwatch, and this last issue of Stormwatch was his last issue.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
He's moving on to something else, but he's going to stay with Demon Knights, which is actually turning out quite good. That started a bit slow, but it's actually turning out quite good. I'm quite enjoying it, but I think out of the two, I was kind of enjoying Stormwatch more. Mm. I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with it too long. I'll probably stick with it for the next arc and see how that goes. And if after this next arc I'm not into it, I'll probably drop it and go into something else.
Now, the aforementioned Peter Milligan is going to take up Stormwatch. That's where he's going. And so that'll be interesting to see how he does. Apparently, he and Mr. Cornell have discussed things, and there's some plans that Cornell had suggested that Mr. Milligan's going to follow through with. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting book. Stormwatch is an interesting book because Martian Manhunter, there's a debate going on. I've been listening to people talk about, in the first issue of Stormwatch, Martian Manhunter says that he used to be a member of the Justice League, and then in the most recent one, he says that he's never been a member of the Justice League.
Yes.
So they've got, it depends.
He said he's never been a member of the Justice League, because if they found out he was a member of Stormwatch, it'd be a betrayal to them.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. Well, we'll see. I like Manhunter as part of Stormwatch. I think that's a group that caters more to his character. He's not just a green Superman in there. When he was in Justice League, he was always a green Superman, but it was the Justice League animated show that gave him his own life and separated him from the Man of Steel. But it's going to be interesting to see going forward how that works.
Of course, I think did they use him in Smallville as well, but they made him look more human?
Yeah, in the comics, he was the Detective John Jones. Of course, his Martian name is translate something similar to that, and he did take on the guise of a detective. So it's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, he did that in Smallville. They had an actor who played him, and it was interesting to see how they did that. But I think it's better to have Martian Manhunter somewhere else than in the Justice League for right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the big story of this last week, and which is probably going to be something that we're going to be talking about for quite a while, to the point where, you know, before we started recording this, you and I were talking about maybe doing a Wayne's comic special about it, is the Watchmen prequel series that's coming out.
Yeah, before Watchmen. They've announced it. It's during the 25th anniversary, so that's kind of a remembrance of it. They are bringing a lot of the heavy hitters in with it, like Jay Lee and, of course, J. Michael Straczynski. Darwin Cook's involved with it. A bunch of other big-name people are going to be involved with it, and they're going to do prequel books on almost all the characters, I believe, and it's going to be a very interesting thing. They're going to run several monthly issues for like each one, and it's going to be interesting things to see about it. There's a lot to talk about with that. So we're going to probably have a special, very likely in 2 weeks we'll have that. So we will be talking about Before Watchmen soon. It is big news, and it's definitely worth doing, so much so that we'll devote a whole episode to it.
Well, I believe that the J. Michael Straczynski comic is, it's all going to be about Rorschach, and basically Rorschach's going to do a tour of America doing good deeds and helping out with TV telephones and helping the underprivileged and trying to reform criminals.
That's a reference to the Grounded storyline that JMS did in Superman. It's interesting because the cover of the Rorschach book is getting a lot of attention. There's this great painting. It's Rorschach's face, which, of course, changes around like a Rorschach symbol. But on the cover, it's actually showing him as the Rorschach symbol on his own face. And a lot of people really like that cover, so that one's got off to a good start.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and move on to the previews. Ian, what books are you looking forward to this week?
Well, obviously, I'm looking forward to Demon Knights. Is looking forward to that comes out this week. But Demon Knights and Frankenstein Agent of Shade, I'm looking forward to this week. I've dropped Suicide Squad, so I will not be getting that this week. And let's see if there's anything else down here that's caught my eye. For Doctor Who fans, Doctor Who Classic Series 4 or 5, I think it is, through IDW is coming out. And it's the first volume of 6. So for the classic Doctor Who fans that want to revisit some of the classic storylines from the from Doctor Who magazine here in the UK.
No, these are actually colored, so the black and white they were in the book in the original format, but they've actually colored them for these books, so they're actually kind of a nice thing to see in color.
Some of them were actually color in the original, but it was, it was old fashioned color. You know, it wasn't color we got now. It wasn't, didn't pop quite as well, quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the classic strips were in color.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out which of Boom. I think there's a Planet of the Apes coming out, but I've not got down to the other comics yet.
No, I don't think there is one this week. I don't see it in there anyway.
I know something I am looking forward to. I've got a preview edition of it, and that's the Bionic Man issue 6.
Yeah. So what did you think of it?
I've not read it. I'm looking forward to it coming out. I'm just aware of it coming out because it's in amongst the preview titles on the Dynamite thing. And as I told you already, Wayne, I don't read things that I'm already reading on there. I usually read issue 1 of something that I'm not already reading on there.
Okay.
See what it's like.
Okay.
So I don't want to spy on it for myself.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and run down a bunch of books that I'm looking forward to. Batgirl and Batwoman are both out this week. Batman and Robin, also number 6. Deathstroke, number 6. Green Lantern, Grifter, Huntress, the 5th of the 6 in that miniseries is out this week. Mr. Terrific, which is canceled, is out number 6. That the aforementioned Penguin, Pain and Prejudice, number 5 of 5 is out, so you get to see the conclusion of that. Look for that to be collected into a trade. Superboy, number 6, and Resurrection Man, number 6 from DC. There's some other good things coming out. Blue Estate, number 9. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. An excellent crime noir type book, which is great. Severed, number 7 of 7. That's going to be collected into a hardcover before long. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, there's Captain America number 8, John Carter. There's 2 omnibus hardcovers from Marvel. So if you like Warlord of Mars, I'd still buy the Dynamite ones. But if you're a real fan of John Carter, Warlord of Mars, you might want to get those. Although those are about $100 each, so you have to be a real fan for that.
I've just noticed something that you're going to like. Peanuts issue 2 is coming out this week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming up from Boom, which is, they call that Kaboom when it's in the kids section. That actually has done very well for them. As we talked about last week, Adventure Time is going to be one of the ones that they're putting out as well. So they're getting quite a nice collection of kids books, and it's nice to see that because the main comic companies do some, but not a lot. So to have these big properties, which I consider to be main ones, are really good for them. I think that's just wonderful stuff. Also, there's the Warlord of Mars, number 15. Arvid Nelson, who I've had on this podcast several times, writes that. And that is such a good book. You need to buy that one if you like the John Carter stories, because that's really the one to have. Other than that, the Lone Ranger Zorro trade paperback is out about the death of Zorro. In that reality, supposedly, those two are related to each other. And by the way, I mentioned Adventure Time. Adventure Time number one is out, as well as Peanuts number two. So if you have kids, this might be the time to take them to the store this week. Other than that, there's a couple of other things real quickly. There is the Dark Matter number 2 of 4 from Dark Horse Comics. Dark Matter is written by some of the folks who are behind Stargate SG-1 on those series for sci-fi and related channels. So Dark Matter is really good. The crew has basically forgotten who they are. And they wake up on a starship going through space carrying somebody who seems to know more than they do but won't fess up. So they're learning as they go along. Also, the book The Strain number 3 of 12 is out from Dark Horse. Okay, and on that note, we'll come to a conclusion with this week's news and preview. And we'll be back next week. Thanks, Ian.
No props.
And that's a wrap for the 44th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll have more interviews, news, and previews, and reviews. So be sure to be here. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
Hal Jordan of Earth, Green Lantern of Sector 2814. The Viceroy of Demrak 7 claims that when we assigned you to police crucial peace negotiations, you punched him in the face. Is this true?
No, sir. I punched the Viceroy in the stomach. Then I headbutted him in the face. Sir.